Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, August 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live at age gracefully with dignity and respect. Daughtersofsarah.org. Today, we welcome Dr. Adam Petchers from Vassar Brothers Medical Center at Northern Dutchess Hospital. He's a general surgeon with a background in bariatric medicine and bariatric surgery. So today, we'll talk about metabolic weight loss and bariatric surgery and hot topics related to losing weight. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Adam Petchers and your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday, and in the studio today is Dr. Adam Petchers, a board-certified general surgeon and fellowship-trained minimally invasive surgeon at Vassar Brothers Hospital at Northern Dutchess Hospital. His areas of expertise include robotic surgery, bariatric surgery, complex abdominal wall, and hiatal hernia repairs. Today we'll talk mainly about metabolic weight loss, bariatric surgery, and Dr. Petchers will, of course, take your calls. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or feel free to email the program voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email, and the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Adam Petchers, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
So we'll just start right with the million-dollar question. Weight loss drugs are everywhere. I can't turn a TV on without seeing a bunch of people in dance routines getting excited about weight loss. Where do you stand? Is there a place for this?
Is there a place? Absolutely. They have totally changed the landscape of what I do, what we do in the bariatric world, in good and bad ways. So they are an extremely effective tool, and we are figuring out still the best way to use them, how to integrate them into surgery, how to avoid surgery in some people, how to maintain weight loss after surgery. And the results early on are extremely promising. Of course, a lot of downsides in terms of the unknowns.
Okay. All right. So now the advent of these as weight loss drugs, some of these were diabetes drugs before this, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
The advent of their use and widespread use, so much so that some of these medications are tough to come by at times, this began relatively recently. What do we know about the potential downside of these, the side effects?
Yeah, so the hormone that all these drugs are based on is called GLP-1. It's been known about since the early 20th century. It's normally made in the body. The struggle for the first 100 years was figuring out how to get it in a form that lasts in the body. And so now these new injectable drugs have done that. And the hormone, it impacts pretty much every organ in the body after eating. So we know, at least in normal function in the body, it's perfectly healthy because it's part of what we have in all of us. But what we don't know is in this sustained use, the way it is, it raises our level sort of continuously, what that looks like long term, because it's never been experienced before.
And how long, how many years, and this is a completely subjective question, but how many years does something like this have to be in use before Dr. Adam Petchers says, all right, this is very cool?
Oh, I already say it's very cool. I mean, I prescribe it all the time.
But what I mean is where you say, I'm very comfortable with the potential side effects. For instance, you said it affects every organ. What could it possibly do to your lungs?
We don't really know.
Doesn't this concern you?
Absolutely. But I weigh it against the definite known negative effects of the untreated obesity. And so, you know, Ozempic has been around, at least in clinical trials, started 12, 15 years ago, something like that. So we certainly have some long-term data. The volume of data is growing, but we know what obesity untreated for 15 years does, and that is
it's not a good
detrimental.
Thing.
No.
Yeah. Dr. Adam Petchers joins us today. It's bariatric medicine. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. On average, and I don't know if you have this number, but taken as a whole, all these different drugs, there are several popular ones. They all have dance numbers. They're all on TV. What's the average weight loss per patient, per average patient?
The manufacturers themselves, they say around 30-35% of starting body weight. And so varies, obviously, a tremendous amount based on how heavy someone is when they're starting the drug.
Where are you losing it, though? Muscle mass, fat? How are you losing this weight?
Both. A lot of it depends on the dietary habits while you're taking it. And that's a huge part of what I work with patients on, who I prescribe it for, is trying to maintain muscle mass while losing body fat. And that's the goal, not always the outcome.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. What happens when people go off this drug or these drugs?
Most people gain the weight back. 75 to 100% of that weight they lost, they gain it back within the first couple months.
So does this tell you that it is a condition of the patient not being rigorous enough to make those changes, or is it a condition of the drug that once you're done, your metabolism goes back to the way it was?
I think it's a combination. You know, certainly there are examples of both, but I have myself patients who they stop the drug, they keep eating meals the same way, they keep their exercise the same way, and the weight still comes back. So there is a metabolism component, and part of that is the fact that these drugs are affecting every organ system, not just the brain, not just the gut, but they're really complicated, and we don't truly understand the full effect, but they do have that effect.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Adam Petchers is a certified general surgeon at Vassar Brothers Medical Center and Northern Dutchess Hospital. You obviously do bariatric surgery. Has the incidence of bariatric surgery, or when you prescribe it, or when people want it, has that gone down since the advent of these weight loss drugs?
It's gone down somewhat. I think in large part because the drugs become a new option for a subset of people who surgery was the only option before. But at the same time, a lot more people are coming into the office, are feeling comfortable or even hopeful in talking about their weight because these drugs exist. And they're not right for everyone. Surgery is, you know, certainly still the most effective and longest lasting treatment for obesity. But the popularity of the drugs is helping to make it more accessible to talk about obesity as a medical condition rather than as a stigma.
That's so funny that you bring up the word stigma. Why should someone have, I mean, if you can't talk about this stuff with your doctor, who can you talk with? You know, there shouldn't be a stigma about that. This is what you're there for, right? You're there to make things as better as you can.
Absolutely. But I think a lot of patients have heard year after year after year, you need to lose weight. You need to lose weight from all their doctors. You know, this is why you have this medical problem, without really having hope of being able to lose weight. They try exercise and they try changing their diet, but they haven't been able to. And so they don't want to talk about it because it's only negativity. Now suddenly, okay, there potentially is a road to treatment to help you lose weight. And so people then feel more open about talking about it again.
Are you a BMI guy? Do you subscribe to this pretty closely?
Yeah, it's useful. I mean, you know, a lot of how it actually impacts us is in terms of insurance and how they look at BMI and who gets what, you know, treatment
right.
paid for. But it is a useful rough estimation of the degree of obesity.
The reason I ask, don't you think that sort of the ideal weight for a person is really just a number and every person has a slightly different ideal weight?
They certainly do. And that ideal weight changes with age. The number of 60, 65-year-olds coming in stating the ideal weight that they Googled for themselves, and, you know, that's a weight that's healthy for a teenager. You know, say a 5'4" woman, ideal body weight on the internet might be like 110 pounds. That's not ideal body weight for an adult.
Does it go up or down when you get old?
It goes up. You need more reserve. If you have a serious illness, pneumonia or something like that.
Interesting.
The body needs more of a physiologic reserve as you age. So that what the ideal is does change.
It's weight loss and bariatric surgery today with Dr. Adam Petchers of Vassar Brothers Medical Center at Northern Dutchess Hospital. Our number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we will race to the phones after this. Richard Betts wrote that one for the Allman Brothers. Jessica here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. They called him Dickie Betts. Today it's Medical Monday, and bariatric surgery, weight loss drugs are on the table. Dr. Adam Petchers joins us from Vassar Brothers at Northern Dutchess Hospital. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's begin in Northampton. Sarah, you're on. Slow start. Sarah, hello. What do you think, Zach? Should I be paid? Okay. Goodbye, Sarah. I'm so sorry. 800-348-2551. Call back, Sarah, in Northampton, and I'll get you on. Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're up.
Does cinnamon have any effect on weight loss?
Well, what do you think, Dr. Petchers?
Well, I think it makes food more delicious.
It certainly does.
In normal dietary quantities, no appreciable effect.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and there's a whole bunch of spices that I've used
turmeric
historically.
And everything else.
Yeah. In extreme quantities, you can probably show some sort of effect in study, but not in any sort of normal dietary. And by that, I also mean safe, amount
right.
to eat.
You don't want it. Jim, how much cinnamon do you eat generally?
Not very much.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, you're okay then. Jim, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's weight loss and bariatric surgery with Dr. Adam Petchers today. Let's go to Kingston. Susan, you're on.
Hi. Hello. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Oh, very well. Very well, kind of. I'm having a problem. I had the bariatric sleeve done years ago, and everything was fine for a while. And then I'm struggling with this thing that I've had since I was a child, hungry all the time. I hate feeling hungry. I absolutely hate it. And this hunger thing is like I could eat a full, healthy meal. An hour later, I feel like I haven't eaten anything for days. I wish it would stop. I don't know what to do. I do see my bariatric doctor today, but I am just desperate because this thing feeling hungry all the time is not working, and I am on Ozempic.
Well, what do you think, Doc?
Well, I'm glad that you say that you're seeing your bariatric doctor today, because that for folks who have had surgery, that's sort of the number one thing to do is stay with your surgeon, with the practice for a long time to help address problems like this. Whether it is...
My original surgeon. I switched to somebody that's closer by, and I had just gained weight, and because this hunger won't stop.
Even with the sleeve?
Yes.
Huh.
But
it lasted for maybe a year, and then I was like back to being starving all the time.
Huh.
Part of the struggle with eating that folks run into throughout their life is there's lots of signals to the brain as to when you're hungry, when you're full, when you're not hungry. And whether it's through time, whether it's through eating habits, whether it's through environments, those get broken, for various people at various times. And that's a huge struggle for an adult then trying to kind of reset those things. Surgery, the sleeve, you said it helped for a year, but it doesn't totally fix the problem without sort of being able to reset that for yourself, the vision of how big a meal should be on a plate, how many servings you should get, how often you should be eating, how long a meal should take place. All these things are clues to the brain about how long you should be hungry, in addition to the blood sugar effects, the intestine effects. And so everything that we do, whether it is surgery or the medications, they're tools, but they're not a complete fix.
So you're suggesting...
I don't know what to do.
Go ahead, Susan.
What's the feeling of being hungry all the time? It's like, no matter what I eat, when I eat, how I eat, how much I eat, it's still always there. It's like a nonstop thing. I don't know what's causing it, but I've had it since I was a child.
Oh, boy. You sound like my children, too, Susan.
I do wish you luck with the bariatric, you know, provider, the surgeon that you're seeing.
Yeah.
There are things to look into. You know, I don't want to give too much specific
individual
medical advice,
but
there are things to look into to work up and you know, bring it up. It is key.
Thanks, Susan. I appreciate it. Now, to me, you suggest there is a psychological component to this. Your brain has to say, oh yeah, that's the perfect size meal. So you have the sleeve gastrectomy or whatever the surgery is. And part of this is to say, okay, I'm full now, right? Is that what the end goal is of having the surgery? I've eaten my piece. I'm full. I'm sated. You got to tell your mind that as well. Do you have to go to a re-education camp to train your mind? I mean, habit and a lifetime of this is a tough thing to break.
It's incredibly tough. It's incredibly tough. And that's in terms of heading towards surgery and preparing people for surgery. That's one of the things I try and impart on people. The first year, 2 years, 3 years after surgery, that's the golden time to sort of help retrain your body. Because after the sleeve, I'm sure people have had it, you know, you take one sip of water and you feel like you're stuffed, like you ate the biggest meal in the world.
Really?
And initially, you know, first day. First week, it slowly changes.
Does
you can
it stretch
eat more.
Out?
You
what happens?
More. It does stretch out. The body adjusts. The body gets used to it. So part of it is relying on that early strong feedback, because everyone's stomach will eventually send a signal up to the brain when it's full. So relying on that really strong feedback to then help tell yourself, tell your brain, tell your eyes, this is the size of a normal meal. This is the size of an appropriate healthy meal. Because eventually you lose that strong feeling and it goes back to the brain being in control.
Let me ask you this question, and I don't know the physical nature of the various types of bariatric surgery, but sleeve gastrectomy is one and there is...
Gastric bypass is probably the most common.
But
one.
Both of them over time can sort of relapse, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that physically bad if you've taken away some body parts that are supposed to make you feel full, and you gain weight again? Isn't that not good?
It is absolutely a problem. And that leaves with the struggle that Susan's having, which is, okay, what next? You know, you're losing options. Part of it is frequently dietary modification. But, you know, I mentioned before, staying involved in the program to address the problems early is the key, because each step you take, you sort of lose other options if it comes back as a problem.
When you accept the new patient, are you doing a psychological workup on all?
That is part of criteria for every single patient undergoing bariatric surgery, is to meet with behavioral health specialists and sort of to evaluate potential roadblocks.
Are some patients, potential patients, not going to make it and not qualify for bariatric surgery?
Yeah, definitely. And I will say for those... that's probably for the best for them, you know, and that's what we do these assessments for. Figure out who's going to run into problems, who's going to be successful. We don't want to do surgery on someone who's going to fail 3 years later.
Yeah.
You know, because like I said, that leaves you with fewer real options. We want to do surgery on the people who it's right to do surgery for.
We're joined by Dr. Adam Petchers today from Vassar Brothers and Northern Dutchess Hospital. The number is 800-348-2551. It's metabolic weight loss. It's bariatric surgery. It's your calls. And now I think we found the elusive Sarah in Northampton. Let's hope she's there. Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
You're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think this might be a little different than what you've heard. I'm a 71-year-old female. 3 years ago, I was never more than 20 pounds overweight, but was vigorously healthy. And a friend of mine got some Ozempic. It was brand new. And she said, why don't you want to try it with me? And together we tried it. And she felt great and started losing weight. And I felt immediately sick. And since then, I have been very ill. I I don't know what was wrong with me. I started feeling worse and worse and worse, and then I turned yellow.
Yikes.
And was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And that was 3 years ago. And I have since had chemo, radiation, and the Whipple surgery. I am cancer-free, and I feel fantastic. But what a roller coaster it was. My theory was that the Ozempic just inflamed my pancreas to the place it was already inflamed, and it tipped the scale. And they found the malignant tumor in my bile duct very, very early, almost subclinically, and treated it. And I was just curious about what you know about Ozempic causing pancreatic inflammation.
All right, fair question.
That's quite the road that you've been through. It's good to hear, though, that you are cancer-free now. Congratulations.
Yeah, I went to MGH. I'm on the cure list now.
Good for you.
Good. So certainly we have been seeing these GLP-1 injections have a big impact on the bile ducts, the biliary system, and the pancreas. Gallstone formation ends up actually being probably one of the most common things in the first couple years. And, if it happened to be small gallstone formation that irritated that cancer in the bile duct that revealed it for you, I mean, that's, conveniently lucky it got revealed early, but...
You're not kidding. I mean, I thought maybe it was the smartest thing I ever did. It revealed my pancreatic or gall irritation. They did remove my gallbladder, but they say they do that with all the Whipple procedures. And but I feel fantastic now, and it's kind of weird how fantastic I feel after all this.
Yeah.
I was very lucky. I wasn't diabetic. I wasn't an alcoholic. I wasn't too overweight. I was active, and I recovered quite well. But I was very concerned about Ozempic, and I'm very curious to see how the trial, how now, as many, many people take it, if it causes inflammation in other organs.
And no indication of that.
Well, pancreatitis is a definite known side effect, inflammation of the pancreas in general.
Yeah.
Whether that comes from gallstones commonly or by itself, both tend to occur. Gallstones are probably the more common cause overall. I would not advise taking Ozempic
without a prescription
with a friend at a party because there's no one sort of watching that, and preparing you for
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
By the way, Sarah, you don't have to answer this question, but you said yourself you didn't really ever have weight problems and this and that. What possessed you to go in on the Ozempic train then?
I'm a successful weight loss person. I mean, since I was, if I needed to lose 20 pounds, I did. I was always conscious of my weight. My dad was very overweight. My mother was never overweight, but I was always conscious of keeping it at a healthy place. And I was lucky I could continue to do it. But as I got older, I was 68 then, I was finding it harder and harder. I was about 20 pounds overweight. And I thought, why not try this new wonder drug? And
interesting.
Well, quite an experience.
Now, from our legal department, I want to make it clear that we're not saying that Ozempic caused your pancreatic cancer, but we're happy that you did very well and the Whipple worked out for you. And thanks for the call. No, by all means, we are not saying that. All right.
No, absolutely. Not.
It's PETCHERS, just in case there's a lawsuit. Sally in Hinsdale. Sally, you're on with Dr. Adam Petchers.
Hi. I, too, am an older person, 65 now, so hard to lose weight no matter what I did for a year, couldn't do it. So I'm on Zepbound 5 milligram, and side effects, holy macro, I am lightheaded all the time. Everybody else said, you'll get used to it, it'll stop. No, not for me. I don't even think I'm going to continue on it because I am listless and I am lightheaded. Severely.
Is that
common?
Surprisingly common. Actually, I think the most common thing I'm seeing, in the past year of prescribing these has been dehydration, sort of impacting other things like that. And headaches, lightheadedness. My first suspicion would be dehydration. The medication makes you lose free water in the kidneys. And so...
I do drink tons of water like I've never done before.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and then some folks are just more sensitive to these medications than others in terms of side effects. You hear a whole bunch of great, easy stories because millions of people are, you know, are taking these. So there's people who have an easy time, people have a hard time, and there's a range, you know. But certainly the impacts of the med are widespread, and then what it does to your other medications could change. If you lose weight, suddenly maybe your blood pressure medications are too strong because your high blood pressure is getting better.
Well, I thought of that, and I asked my doctor about it. Yeah, I asked him, because I am on blood pressure med, and I said, gee, should I cut it back? And I don't think she knows a whole lot about this. She hasn't even advised me a whole lot about this at all.
Okay.
So she said, no, I don't want to change your blood pressure strength. Okay.
Okay, well, unfortunately, Dr. Petras can't do anything about that one, but do you want to do a quick follow-up, or are you good, Sally?
Do a lot of people have the lightheadedness that stay? Or do they adjust?
Most people adjust, and that's, you know, I think what you've said, your friends have told you. Most people, to most of the side effects, adjust, but again, it's varied person to person.
Interesting. Sally, thanks for the call. I mean, some drugs that I know of, you got to take them with food or you don't take them with food. Managing side effects has to be part of what you do too, right?
Absolutely. And preparing people for the side effects. Because these medications, we start off at a very, very low dose and we gradually increase so that people don't get terrible side effects. And so letting people know what to look out for, what to deal with. And constructive eating habits. So regular meals, regular meal times. Lots of hydration tend to be key in preventing a lot of the side effects, or at least mitigating them.
Interesting. You know, that's a great question about meal times. As a bariatric doctor, what's the time at night that you should stop having a snack before bed? How many hours?
I wouldn't have a snack, period, before bed. I'd have dinner. Dinner, 7 o'clock, maybe 3 hours before bed.
Then you have a pizza about 10, something like that?
Well.
No?
No.
All right, fair enough. 800-3 That was a free consultation just now, right?
Well, I'll bill you. You'll get it in the mail in a couple months, and you'll. What is this from,
Doctor? Yeah, I've seen that before. Doctor Adam Petras joins us today. It's bariatric surgery, metabolic weight loss. 800-348-2551 Eddie's in New Paltz. Eddie, go ahead.
Go ahead. I think my name's Betty, not Eddie.
Oh, it says Etty, E-T-T-Y. I thought that was kind of cool.
I know. Said to him 3 times, you didn't get it.
All right, well, fair enough. He's a nice man. And
anyway,
okay, go ahead.
I just want to say that I'm 83 years old. I've been overweight since I'm 6. I've been majorly overweight, and I'm still majorly overweight. I have a little hypertension. I'm pre-diabetic for years, totally under control. I take no medications whatsoever, but I did put intermittent fasting into my routine. Plus, I got into organic foods and good nutrition in the 60s. So I wanted to know what the doctor thought about all that. I am quite healthy, considering my huge overweight. Except I have bad knees now. That's only the past few years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you think, Doc?
Betty with a B?
With a B, yes.
Yeah.
So I'll take it in a couple different pieces. So first, intermittent fasting. You know, I think the theory behind that is essentially you can only put in so many calories in this short period of time, and then you're fasting the whole rest of the day.
Well, I don't do it by the book. What I do is I don't have any food before 11 o'clock in the morning in general. And then I have a nice meal, like I'll have eggs with salad and maybe a piece of toast. You know, organic foods, and then I might have some snacking. Now, I have lost about 60 pounds that I'm holding, and I personally am terrified of drugs and surgery. I think they all have side effects, so surgery doesn't, but drugs do. I take only a couple of pills for hypertension, which has been under control for like 20 years or whatever.
Okay.
And I just don't like to put any chemicals in my body.
Okay.
I can keep away from it.
So stipulated. All right. So what do you think, Doc?
So with, you know, like you're saying, you're not really following intermittent fasting, you know, by the book. And I think that's the struggle a lot of people have with a lot of the diets is they are quite extreme. They're extremely difficult to stick to and stick to for years or decades. And so it ends up becoming most likely eating larger meals than the meals that you eat end up eating the same number of calories that you would typically, or overeating because you're extra hungry each time you have a meal rather than the true limitation. So I'm not a big, I tend to not advise intermittent fasting because it is so hard to stick to how it's written. And
but I have,
we got to take a break here in a minute, Betty. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have found that by not eating before 11, which doesn't make me, I'm not starving or anything. I've gotten used to that form. I have a nice, healthy meal around 11, and then maybe I'll have I have a very low appetite from everything.
Okay, well, I want to follow up with some questions with the doc on your behalf after a break, but we're way overdue, Betty, and thank you for not being petty about the Eddie. 800-323-9262 is our number for the fund drive, but our show number is 800-348-2551. It's very exciting. We'll talk more with Dr. Petchers in a moment. Big Band of Brothers there doing an Allman Brothers classic. Stand back here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Yeah, it's Medical Monday, and it's metabolic weight loss. It's also bariatric surgery. Dr. Adam Petchers from Vassar Brothers Hospital and Northern Dutchess Hospital is with us. So on Betty's behalf, a couple of questions following up on some of the things that she said. One. And I'll go back to conventional folk wisdom that says, you know, you got to get a good breakfast in to get your metabolism working. Is that true or not true?
Good breakfast is definitely helpful. And I think it structures the whole day in terms of eating. People who don't eat breakfast, and it's really very, very, very common. People don't eat breakfast. They tend to eat late at night. They tend to eat right before bed, like we were talking about before. Eating large meals and then laying down and sleeping for 10 hours, 9 hours, 8 hours is not helpful for losing weight. So breakfast tends to set the day up. It sets the body up to be hungry when they wake up. Those folks who eat late at night, they're not hungry when they wake up. That's why they don't eat breakfast.
So is it kickstarting your metabolism for the day?
Well, you're at least using those calories that you've ingested.
Yeah.
Okay. Right then, instead of having to store them and then reuse them later.
All right, I understand. Now, organic food. Betty mentioned a couple of times she eats a lot of organic food. Is there any appreciable and demonstrable advantage for weight loss of eating organic food?
So the short answer is no. The longer answer, when you look at how it is studied, people who tend to eat organic food tend to have a healthier weight. But people who eat organic food tend to have more money. And people who have more money absolutely tend to have a healthier weight.
Interesting.
And so it's difficult to separate those factors out. But we know that socioeconomic status is a huge predictor of obesity. It's inversely related.
All right. Another possible predictor of obesity. Now, listening to Betty talk, Betty sounded like to me, and I'm no expert on anything, that she didn't eat a great deal. She didn't eat a ton of food and wasn't being a glutton, and yet she said she was very overweight for her whole life. What factor does heredity play in this?
It absolutely plays a role. How the magnitude of that is so hard to figure out. We know it runs in families, but there tends to also be a social component, right? Whether or not people's weight matches the people that they're around or people hang out with people who are a similar weight, hard to discern. But the body's own experience itself, I think, probably plays the biggest role, right? So the body, everyone's body has this set point, a weight that it's trying to achieve. We don't really know why. Some of them are healthy weights. Some of them are unhealthy weights. We know things that make it worse, right? So stress makes that
makes you gain weight.
Makes you gain weight.
Why?
Body's protecting itself in case there's starvation.
Even if you don't eat more.
Well, it slows your metabolism. So you can eat the same amount and you're storing more of those calories.
Huh. Amazing.
And so stress, working overnight, Getting older does that as well. And so we know there are various things that raise that set point, but why one person's, you know, at a young age is higher than another's?
Okay.
We don't truly know.
Well, Betty, I hope I followed up enough on your behalf. The number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Adam Petchers joins us today, and let's go to Michelle in Great Barrington. Hello, Michelle.
Hi.
You're on.
My question is, hello.
Hi.
What are the long-term effects of taking Ozempic?
Long-term effects. And, well, we spoke about that in the beginning of the show. But anyway, go ahead, Doc.
Ask me again in 20 years?
Not enough time.
And we'll let you know. Yeah, that's part of the problem is, you know, and to be fair, in most of the areas in which it's been studied, you know, compared to results of heart disease, stroke and things on it, it tends to be helpful, but we just don't know.
Well, doesn't that concern you? I mean, again, you know, I've heard doctors say, well, gosh, you know, the government takes so long to approve things. But in this case, have they rushed it too much for this use without knowing what it does 10 years, 20 years down the road?
I think phrasing it that way is particularly helpful because it is a chronic, lifelong illness, right? Obesity that you're treating. And so while it's studied in a short term, we know it's healthy, what do you say to the 22-year-old who's going to start taking it? And maybe we'll be taking this medication for 70, 80 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so we certainly can't study it to that degree. And that does scare me. Obesity and weight loss medication has a long history of seeming great and then having problems down the road. And so I am skeptical, but like we talked about, in the right patients, it is certainly better than leaving it untreated.
So the risk is worth it in some cases.
Yeah.
Michelle, you want to follow up?
I do want to follow up. So if one stops taking it, are you likely to gain the weight back?
Yep, almost everyone who stops taking it gains the weight back, and usually relatively quickly.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Michelle. Appreciate it. Alexandra's in Kerhonkson. Alexandra, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering about what your thoughts were on long-term fasting. I've done a 10-day fast before for general health and wellness and some weight loss, and what precautions you advise, or if it should be done with a juice, fasting, or supplements.
I mean, the first thing I'll say about it is probably don't do it.
Really?
Yeah. So one of the body's great at adapting. The body responds to things in ways to help protect it next time, right? So what do you do when you fast your body for 10 days? You make your body think it's starving. It is starving, you know, and that's why the weight loss. So then when you bring food back in, the body is, okay, I'm going to store extra calories because I am prone to starvation, right? I have these episodes of starving. And historically, in evolution, that's probably the most common stress faced by mammals, primates, humans, periods of starvation. And that's why the body's so great at storing food, why we struggle with obesity so much, right? Because the body is so good at that. And so by fasting, you're training the body to just do that more and more and more strongly.
Mm.
And also setting yourself up, you know, for short-term problems like electrolyte issues, dehydration, protein imbalances.
Right.
So I would advise against it.
Alexandra, go ahead.
So what amount of fasting would you recommend then for, like, the notion of cleansing your body or detoxing from heavy metals and things like that?
In terms of cleansing, detoxing, that, you know, that sort of outside the established medical sphere, I would focus more on a calorie deficit. Now, it's difficult to tell how many calories the body's truly needing in terms of a basal metabolic rate. There's estimates, you know, estimates based on height, weight, age, sex, and then how much exercise you do. But much more sustainable is being at a small calorie deficit. So let's say your body needs 1,800 calories a day, being at 1,600 for years.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to lead to the healthiest weight loss. It's hard to do. It's hard to tell your body, I'm just making myself a little more hungry every single day. It's the hardest thing that probably most people could do. But in terms of the healthiest way to lose weight and let the body gradually adjust and stay at that new weight, mm-hmm. that's probably the most reliable.
Alexandra, thanks for the call. Getting back to the call prior, and the long-term effects of some of these drugs, these GLP-1, is that what they are? They're all, that's the class?
GLP-1 agonists.
Does the body eventually develop a tolerance?
For sure.
Really? So you have to up the dose? If somebody stays, you say, okay, patient X, you're going to be on this for the next 40 years. You have to keep upping the dosage?
Yeah, and that's what I worry about, and that's what I talk to people about when we start. I try to keep people at the lowest dose possible that's working, because knowing this could be a long road, and I see it wear off in terms of its effectiveness. You know, they're once weekly injections, and so typically the way in which people experience it wearing off is, well, it's lasting 6 days, it's lasting 5 days, and then they're feeling this appetite raging back, and so we increase the dose, and that lasts for a while. But the body adjusts. I think it's really a race between new drug development, you know, and people developing tolerance, because there's no sort of endpoint that we're working towards right now.
Don't you think the pharmaceutical companies love that? There's no end. You're going to be on this forever. Sign on the dotted line.
Yeah.
Hey, before we go to the next call, little off topic here, okay? I see these ads. For they're cosmetic procedures, I assume, where they're pulling fat out of your belly with a vacuum, okay? You lose a lot of weight that way. Maybe you lose 20, 30 pounds. Well, I don't even know how many pounds. Is that a plus? Is that a positive, aside from this baggy skin that you get? Does it help your lifespan? Does it help your, not you, your patient's quality of life and overall health?
I don't know. But I'm going to guess no. I'm going to guess no, because the same things we talked about with the body's going to try and put it back, and you're just giving it a stress to now. You're giving it your playbook, and now it can fight against you in that.
Well, I guess you're right. But, I mean, you're taking, if you take 30 pounds off, your heart's got to love you for it.
For how long?
Okay.
And put it back in a year.
What a killjoy. Let's go back to the phones. Rhonda's in Sheffield. Rhonda, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And my friend Valerie, if she hadn't called and told me you guys were on, I wouldn't know. I just had bariatric surgery. Wednesday, it'll be 5 weeks. And so far, so good. I do have a question, though. I'm curious about why it is that surgeons would have different protocols for after surgery, and even before. I found that interesting. I know a couple other people in other states that have had this surgery. Mine was done laparoscopically, and I had great results, you know, immediately afterwards, and I'm real pleased with how things are going, but I understand it's done different ways in other places. I would have thought that's standardized.
Well, thanks for your question, and thanks to Valerie for letting you know that we were on the air. You know, in terms of protocols beforehand, a lot of that's driven by insurance requirements, which varies, you know, place to place, state to state. Some of it's individual surgeon preference in terms of what they see success or failures associated with and try to fix that. But in the surgeries themselves, you know, it's an evolving field still to some degree. Even though gastric bypass for weight loss has been around since the 70s, it's still evolving as we do learn more about it and ways to adjust. But I would say the hardest thing to know is how each individual's body is going to adapt to it, because what works for one person is just not quite the same. You know, it's not like you take out someone's appendix. You don't have an appendix. Period. Done. Easy.
How
the body reacts, because you have to do it in a way that's still functional.
May I ask one more question?
Sure,
I'm wondering about the gut biome. How is that going to be different, if at all, after this surgery? I had asked, and I wasn't. It wasn't clear to me.
All right, that's great. And before we go to that answer, just for those who don't know, just a quick one-liner on what the gut biome is, Doc.
So the intestinal tract is filled with bacteria and fungus, and that is normal. And more, there's more cells of bacteria in your intestines than there are cells of you in your body. So And that changes from the stomach going through the small intestine and the large intestine, and it changes person to person. And a lot of new discoveries in the last couple decades about how important it is, but so much less, or rather, we're not yet there in terms of really knowing how to adjust it. You know, they've done things with mice where they introduce one bacteria, and then suddenly that mouse loses a whole bunch of weight, and then they kill that bacteria, and then all the weight comes back.
Interesting.
So there are effects. We just don't know.
All right, Rhonda, great call, and thank you very much. Let's quickly go to Dan. Dan, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I had to switch off Zepbound. I was having a few complications with 2.5 milligrams, went up to 5 milligrams, and constipated and agita to beat the band.
Ouch.
So I just had to give up on it. It's been about 2 weeks, and I've gained about 3 pounds back. I'm cognizant of my food intake. I've had a cold, so I haven't been able to work out as much as I usually do. But what are the options at this point?
So medication-wise, Zepbound and Ozempic are really in that same class that we talked about, the GLP-1 agonists.
Right.
And those are sort of the current most effective, you know, in terms of magnitude of weight loss. But there is a whole long history of various different medications. A lot of them are oral medications, and most of them are medications that are used for other things that some of their side effect is weight loss. And so they're being used off-label for weight loss. And they've gone through FDA approval to be approved for weight loss, but they're not as effective. They have their own clusters of side effects. But for folks who are just too sensitive to the GLP drugs or it's just not quite working right, there are a lot of other oral alternatives. But typically those tend to be managed by metabolic weight loss specialists. You know, our office, we do a little bit, and there's a few other offices around that do that. A little probably too in detail for...
Especially at the end of the show. Dan, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. All right, Dr. Adam Petchers of New Vance Health. How do people find out more about what you do, and how do people get in touch if need be?
Well, certainly you can find us in Rhinebeck at Northern Dutchess Hospitals, where our main office is. We have satellites down in Vassar Brothers. Over in Kingston, we have offices.
Yeah.
Come see us to talk about weight. Doesn't matter what kind of your weight is, but we'll talk about goals and options and figure out from there.
Hey, man, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Support comes from Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live and age gracefully with dignity and respect. DaughtersofSarah.org. Thanks again to Dr. Adam Petchers for being here today. Thank you for listening. Wonderful calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Very svelte he is. Thanks to Bob Rathman, equally svelte, who screened the calls today. I'm Ray Graff. Yeah, not so svelte. Tomorrow, it's Genealogy with Tracy Scrabbit. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.